On this retreat, we've been doing an integrated approach to the Dharma, weaving Vipassana practice along with the Brahma Viharas. And we've gone through the first two Brahma Viharas, the first one being metta, either being defined as boundless friendliness or loving kindness, whichever appeals to you. It's near enemy. What is its near enemy? I'm sorry, it's desire and passion. That's right. Just did a complete blank. It's desire and passion. And so that's why when we use metta, we don't use sexual partners or spouses as that icon of evoking metta for us. And the far enemy is aversion, which can turn to hatred. So metta is the antidote for aversion and hatred. And then Richa talked about karuna, which is compassion. And as Rich explained, compassion is sending metta out to those who are suffering and cultivating compassion in our own minds for ourselves and others. So the near enemy is pity, which has a sense of I'm superior than you and I'm so sorry for you, but lucky me, I'm not you. That's not compassionate. And the far enemy is cruelty. So tonight we're going to talk about, or rather I'm going to talk about, mudita. And mudita is the third Brahma Vihara, and it is the sympathetic joy and happiness for someone else's good fortune. There's no English word equivalent like loving kindness or compassion. It's a long description. And mudita is very complicated. When Dennis said he would like to cover the Brahma Viharas, I immediately said I'd like to cover mudita because I have found it a really, really valuable practice, off the cushion mostly. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm doing some on the cushion, mostly at this retreat. So I'll be sharing that with you tomorrow. It is one of the most neglected topics in the Pali Canon. I tried to find a sutta that was based on mudita. I couldn't find one, and I don't know if there is one, and I'm just not looking in the right place, but every time I looked it up in like Access to Insight, which is an online, just wonderful resource for suttas and sutta studies, I found lots of commentaries. Actually, not a lot, like six. But I couldn't find anything that dealt specifically with mudita. It's difficult because it's much easier to feel joy and happiness for those we are close to than those we are not close to. And that's what mudita is asking us to do. Continue with the joy and happiness for those we are close to and happy for them, feeling their joy, but also working our way out to feeling joy even with the difficult person. That's a hard one to do, as I'm sure most of you realize, because I'm sure you've had difficult people in your life, and the last thing in the world you thought of doing was, I'm so happy they're happy. That doesn't happen that often. Mudita's close enemy, and I had a while for working with this, is exuberance. And after thinking about it and reflecting on it, meditating on it, I think I understand why. And you might have a different explanation, and Dennis might have another one, but My understanding is if somebody you're not especially fond of has got something going for them and they've got joy and happiness, and you are supposed to be just as joyful, we tend to put on histrionics and act like this is just great. Oh, I'm so happy for you. That is so wonderful that that's happening for you. And it's all fake. It's this fake exuberance just to get over the hump and, you know, go to your angry place because you wished it was you. So that's the near enemy. The far enemy is, as you might think, envy and jealousy. Judgment. They shouldn't be having this. It should be me. Kind of thing. Another aspect of mudita that I appreciate is, again, I think it's one of the only areas where joy is brought up on its own. I've heard a lot of people complain, where is joy in Buddhist practice? In fact, in this very room 10 years ago, I was sitting right over there. I went to my first monastic retreat with Ayasundara, who came over from Amravati in England, along with Ayasantachita, who was at that time a nun at Amravati under Ajahn Sumedho. And it was a challenging retreat, and as the nuns do, about every two or three days, they say, write down your questions and put them in a bowl in the front like this, and they will select what questions to answer. And it's always very interesting, the things people come up with. And one of them was, where's the joy? And I remember this so explicitly because I was actually wondering the same thing. And Ayasantachita, as you know, is Austrian, a little severe, wonderful woman, you know, one of my, just a wonderful teacher and a dear friend, but, you know, can be a little severe. And she said, I do not cultivate joy. I rid myself of the hindrances. And I was like, whoa. But that's actually true. It's these mental states that we develop that cause us the problems. And as we see on retreat, and we see when we're working in meditation, as they start to slip away, as many of you said, like onion peels, we start to see joy taking place. So it's just coming from a different place. Joy is there. Back to mudita, though, it is the only place that I am aware of where joy is cultivated for other people. That is the purpose. And consequently, you have more joy in your life because you are sharing in the joy of others, whether it's a close friend, all the way to the, what was the word you used, Rich?
Hostile person.
Hostile person, right. Mudita is also different because it is subjective. You know, metta and karuna were cultivating themselves, and we are sending out boundless friendliness and compassion. In mudita, we're not doing that. We are cultivating a state of mind for ourselves. We are not sending out joy. We are sending out, we are in ourselves enhancing our appreciation of other people's joy. So it's a little bit different, and it's much more subtle. It's a little more difficult to work with. You all heard of the fire sermon, the third sermon that the Buddha preached, you know, when he was with his group of disciples and they were sitting up on a mountain overlooking the plain, and fires were raging, forest fires, and that's when the Buddha did the fire sermon, and he said, all things are on fire with greed, hatred, and delusion. Those three fires that he said we need to put out in ourselves are also the fires that give birth to the emotions of jealousy, envy, covetousness, greed, avarice, all which are the hindrances to mudita, and all very, very difficult. Society doesn't support mudita. We're supposed to compete and win. And the best I think society does as far as, well, good sportsmanship. You know, be a good sport. You don't have to be happy for them. In fact, nobody's happy for the losers. As I was writing this talk here just 2 days ago, thank you, Dennis, for printing it out, I was thinking of Rich and the Giants and the Dodgers. And I'm thinking, okay, the Giants and Dodgers are playing, and it's down to the ninth inning, and there's one more out, and the Dodgers hit a home run. Now, what if all the Giant players going, that's so great, I'm so happy for you. It's not going to happen. In fact, it would be considered so abnormal, they'd probably sell the team or do whatever. We don't respond that way normally at all. This is going completely against the grain, yet this is where happiness lies. If we could be happy with the happiness of others. Here's a quote from Montaigne, French philosopher. There is something altogether not too displeasing in the misfortune of others. It's true. So when misfortune happens to people we care about and to causes we care about, we rally around them, but we don't rally around when people we don't know have good fortune. It's pretty much ignored. I have a story that I just learned about it July 7th, and it has to do with compassion and mudita. And July 7th, 8th, and 9th, we had a Buddhist Pathways Prison Project retreat. Lori is our wonderful treasurer. And at the retreat, we were talking about compassion, you know, compassion for a group of people that don't get much compassion, and cultivating it and that sort of thing. And to back up just a minute, when I was in CDL, there was a rumor going around that there was somebody in our group that desperately needed a kidney and was on dialysis and could not come to all the retreats that we were holding. There's five retreats around the U.S. when you're in community Dharma leadership training. And he couldn't come to some of them because he was on dialysis and he couldn't leave. I thought that's too bad. You know, that's a shame. Didn't think too much about it. Didn't know the person. And then I heard he got a kidney. Oh, good. And you felt real sympathetic joy. You know, this is wonderful. Guy's not on dialysis anymore. The kidney took. I was very, very happy. Now, this is 5 or 6 years ago. I completely forgot about it. I assume he got on with his life. And then at this retreat, Walt Opie, who was our executive director, as we were talking about compassion, says, I want to mention a compassionate act. And he said, in CDL, 6 years ago, somebody needed a kidney. And somebody else from our CDL group gave them a kidney. And they had never met them prior to that particular meeting. And he said, and she never wanted anyone to know because she didn't want to take away the joy that he would experience by it being focused on her. So she never told anyone. And Walt told it at the retreat. It was Ellen Fornari. And even then, she acknowledged it, but she said, I don't want any thanks. I'm just so happy he's happy. I thought, wow, that's sympathetic joy. going to the extreme with compassion. So I just I don't know Ellen all that well, but I just have so much love for her, for her doing this. So hindrances to sympathetic joy, there are so many. So I tried to cool them down a bit to just a few, so I won't get just too negative and go into this whole, all the things that are keeping you from enjoying mudita. And to complicate matters, if you have not developed a metta and or karuna practice, mudita is not going to happen. It's almost a linear thing that's happening with the Brahma Viharas, which I've seen in a lot of the Buddhist lists. I think I've mentioned this before. And so you have to work with metta and compassion before mudita is going to take place. You have to have some degree of affection for this to happen. And that only makes sense. If it's only a cold heart and dislike and aversion, there's no joy. There's no joy in you to enjoy the joys in others. So what we need to work with is, first of all, the big one, the real biggie, is judgment. Judgment is huge. Judgment also, sympathetic joy has to be non-judgmental. It has to be. And this goes right back to the First Noble Truth about right view. You know, when I teach the Noble Eightfold Path, and I know many of you have been in my courses, I always come from the wrong view because I've experienced it so much and I have practiced it so much and I know it. And I know what causes pain. And having judgment causes a lot of pain for ourselves and others. I've been happy to see in my life my judgment is wrong frequently, which tends to let you relinquish judgment a lot more easily when you see how wrong you've been. So wrong view is stubbornly clinging to judgment. The next one, big one, this is a biggie, in fact I'm going to do a talk on it in a couple weeks, comparing, the Buddha called it better than, worse than, the same as. So comparing ourselves, our self-worth is how do we stack up against someone else. And that someone else is constantly changing, you know, depending on where you are, what you're doing, what's going on. As I mentioned when I talked about mudita, in Buddhist philosophy, this is called conceit. It's not the conceit that, you know, we in the West think of conceit, which is an elevated view of ourselves. It is actually an obsession with ourselves and how we stack up against everybody else. And at the heart of this is competition. When we start comparing to the point where we're competing, I've got to be best, or I've got to be worse, or I have to be the same as. It's almost like happiness is limited. And if you're happy and you're doing well, then you're taking away some from me. And just like metta, it's unlimited. We all can share in it. And this comparing also, I just found, because I started doing a little experiment with myself, this comparing is very frequently unconscious. You're not even noticing that. Kathy's pink blouse is nice. Bet it would look good on me. And I, you know, it's not even conscious. It's just going on underneath the radar all the time. And this is the experiment I did on myself today. I decided when I came in this morning, I would notice how many times I compared myself to someone else. And I'm not going to go into it with you, but I'll tell you the very first one, and I was amazed it started so early. It was Mary walking in with a very pretty skirt, and I thought, I wish I brought a skirt. And there it is, off and running. And if I hadn't consciously thought, I'm going to see how I judge and compare myself, that would have just gone under the radar and it just would have been there. But it would also be working on my self-identity. Here's more layers, you know, that we're adding on. Instead of just being present with whatever, it was comparing. And what am I doing in this comparison? How am I stacking up? So, like I said, it's often unconscious, and mudita helps us to start seeing that. Start uprooting that. And I'm going to be going into that as an everyday practice. Another hindrance to mudita is prejudice. Prejudice against a person, and whole societies have prejudices, obviously. And again, this idea that happiness, well-being is limited, and if that group is happy and doing well, well, it must be limiting me. I'm not getting all that happiness. And we saw it happening with the Nazis, World War II. Jews were doing well in Germany. Well, why aren't we doing as well or better? They're taking away our joy, our happiness. They must be punished. Gay marriage in this country, they're taking away our values. That's taking away our happiness. We must do something about it. So it's this prejudice that keeps it, this status quo and this judgment that this is the way it is and happiness is limited. Another hindrance to mudita is making light of someone else's good fortune. Something happens to somebody, and instead of feeling a heartfelt sense of happiness for them, you mentally demean it, or maybe even verbally demean it. And I know, doing prison work, we put up with this up till very recently, frequently with guards who continually demeaned. And Chris goes into prison and knows what I'm talking about, who would demean our efforts. We had a large group of men, well, they won't appreciate anything. Nothing's going to help them. They're a bunch of criminals. And always undermining any good feelings or happiness that could come out of the effort. But who's suffering? You know, we were still doing fine. Those guys are the ones who would be suffering because they couldn't even experience the happiness that was starting to take place. I remember one time going in and one guard said, I don't know why you're spending time with those nitwits. You should be spending time with us and helping us. And I said, I would love to. Uh-huh. Who do I talk to? Go away. Okay. And the last one, you know, which is the far enemy, is envy. Actually, no, that's not the last one. Sharon Salzberg, in her book, named one that I found really, really interesting, and it was boredom. She said boredom is a hindrance, and the reason is when you are actively happy for other people's happiness, there's no boredom. You are in a state of joy. She said boredom is sadness and not being concerned and removing yourself. So, something to consider. So, as I mentioned, qualities that enhance mudita, first two, metta and karuna. Got to do those first. Benefits of mudita, I think they're obvious, but I'm going to go into some anyway. One, unselfish joy grows. All these discursive states that I had mentioned just previously, start to disappear. Prejudice, judgment, envy, they all start to leave when we start being happy for the happiness of others. I'll bring it up now. I use mudita in daily life, and I started doing this probably 3 or 4 years ago. And one of the first ways I did it was my son is fiance lives or is from Wisconsin. Her family is from there, and so he was going to about 4 years ago go spend Christmas with her and her family, and I wasn't feeling much joy. My mother was alive at the time. She had dementia, and he was her favorite, and it was always a relief when he was around, and some of the burden was taken off me, and I got to see him, and I loved my soon-to-be daughter-in-law tremendously, and now I was going to be alone, and I was feeling very sorry for myself, and I was not feeling joy for them. And I started studying, and mudita really appealed to me. And I thought, what if I could feel? I really could start developing joy for the wonderful holidays that they're going to have. How that would decrease my own agony, frankly. And I really worked at it, you know, doing lots of metta, and mudita started happening. I really started feeling happy for them. When my son would call, and he was very happy about Kristen's brother, was like a brother to him, the brother he should have had but didn't, and met all these nice people, and I felt joy. I really was happy, genuinely happy. And he had said, I'm so glad you're happy. I was almost afraid to call that you would feel bad. And I said, no, I really am so glad. So anyway, that was that. And then they came back and they spent maybe a week with me around the first of the year. And I forgot about it. And then the year goes by. Now it's a year later and they're going to stay with me. So, of course, I'm happy. Then I thought of Vicky, Kristen's mom, is going to be alone. So I said, Vicky, why don't you come and spend Christmas with us too? And she did. And now that is our family. Both moms go back and forth with the kids, and Vicky has become a dear friend. All because of mudita. And this is why I love this practice. To practical application, it made me a happier person. It helped my family, and I gained a sister. Vicky has become one of my closest friends. We talk frequently. We're sharing a room at the wedding. So I think it's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful trait to develop. One of the sticking points in mudita, I think for many of you, and for me too to a degree, and this, especially after speaking to you in your groups, mudita is also asking you to recognize and appreciate the joy in your own lives. And for many of you, you don't feel you deserve it. I don't know what it will take for you to understand it's your birthright. Happiness is available. It's unlimited. It's just whether you want to take it or not. And I hope you decide to, with your metta practice and your karuna practice, that you will see you are as deserving of happiness as anybody else. You're also, as I mentioned, when you start seeing the joy and happiness in others, and you can feel it too, it's endless. It's endless what can happen. So I'll tell you, Vicky was not the very first time I used mudita. It was actually before then I was just starting to use it, and I told the story at SIM. And I have this wacky dog, rescue dog, who was not socialized, and so when people come over to visit, and you know, people have come over, and I say, don't look at her. Don't look her in the eye, because she gets very upset and growls. So, you know, just ignore her, and then she's happiest, pretending that you don't see her. I know, it's strange. So, giving this dog free range to enjoy herself, I have to look for parks or schools very early in the morning where no one's there, there's no other dogs, there's no people, there's no nothing. I have to orchestrate my life around how to do this. So I'd found, actually I knew about it, there's a school down the about half a mile from me, and if you get there at 6 a.m. before school starts, I can let her loose and she can run. She's now 13 and deaf and she's not running anymore, so I don't have this issue anymore, but I used to. So that was our routine. I'd get there at 6 a.m. and she'd have full run of the place, and she was so happy. She's a Sheltie border collie mix, you know, lots of energy. So one morning I'm on my way there and I look in the yard and there's a man there with a black lab. And my first impulse was, a black lab, the friendliest dog in the world? Why do you need this privacy? I need this because I've got a dog that can't be taken anywhere else. And I had just started working on Mudita, and then I thought, and it was the next thing that came up, which made me so appreciate it. Almost instantaneously after that first negativity was, that dog is so lucky to have an owner who takes the time to get out this early and exercise him. I am so happy for both of them. And I was. I really was. And I said to Annie, we're just going to take a long walk instead. You don't have to run every morning. And we left. When I was teaching A Year to Live, part of the course was, well, it was three parts. And the first part was cultivating joy in your life. Life is short. It's very short. Cultivate joy. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy your loved ones. Enjoy nature. Enjoy all of it. And the next was to get over a fear of death. And then finally, fear itself. So mudita in everyday life. I found another benefit from mudita through the help of many people. I'm going to name a couple who might get embarrassed. We benefit from learning about the joys of other people. Not just, you know, a superficial, but really what brings joy into other people's lives? Actually talking to them and asking. And Miriam is a prime example at our climate change meeting, one of the first ones we had. Miriam was in charge of this particular meeting, and she came in bearing every sort of musical instrument and just laid them out and said, we're going to play. And I thought, first thing was, this isn't going to work. We're a climate change meeting. And the second thing was, this is so much fun. She was beating out rhythms and encouraging everybody to take one of the musical instruments and play. And we played and we had fun and we laughed. And right after that, I said, I want to start learning the guitar. And I told Miriam, I've started playing the guitar. Because it brought such joy, and I wanted that joy to continue. I have a friend who just died August 21st. Her name was Gail Seneca. And I told Rich I was going to talk a little bit about her tonight because she was a remarkable person who brought so much joy. And Gail was only 63. She had a knee replacement and died the day afterwards. One of those things, you know, who knows, heart attack, stroke, I don't know. But Gail is part of the reason Spirit Rock is Spirit Rock. She was a very wealthy woman, and she donated tons of money to Spirit Rock, get buildings up. Jack Kornfield is doing a memorial for her at the end of September at Spirit Rock. Gail cultivated joy constantly. Sandra Sigrist and I went to Burma with she and her husband and 10 other people, including Joseph Goldstein, one of the most stellar trips I ever took. And Gail made it so much fun. I thought I'd be terrified of Joseph Goldstein. But Gail just turned it into a regular person and we laughed and it was just joyful. I would go to her house once every couple months. She had all this pack of rescued dogs that adored her. She also had a pack of rescued people, mostly children of illegal immigrants who she was sending to college. She learned Spanish fluently so she could talk to them because she said they're such joyful people and she loved them so much. When she turned 63 years ago, she decided to hike the El Camino, and that's how I ended up there. I was one of the 20 people invited to hike the El Camino de Santiago de Compostela. And that truly was one of the highlights of my life, thanks to Gail's joy, just wanting to have joy. The last video I saw of Gail loved gospel music, singing to Jesus. She loved it, and she joined a gospel choir. And she didn't care, Buddhist or not, she's going to sing for Jesus. And she did. And the very last video I saw, there she is just wailing away, loving Jesus and swaying back and forth and just so happy. She didn't care what anybody thought. She just did what caused her happiness, and she enjoyed the happiness of others. So I wanted to, in my small way, just do a memorial for her, because I don't know if I'll be around for the Spirit Rock Memorial, and I've already missed one. So as I said, I have found mudita to be such a wonderful daily life practice. You see it happening all the time. When envy comes up, actually cultivating joy that person is wearing something nice that, sure, you'd like to have it, but they look so good in it. I'm so happy for them. I mean, this is from a woman's point of view. Men, you know, it'll be something else, I'm sure. But just as in metta, we also need to do forgiveness practice to work with mudita. And it could be started by something like, I have felt envy and jealousy in many situations. I have not cultivated happiness for others, and for this I forgive myself. And I think all of us have been in that situation where we could cultivate happiness and let go of envy. Mudita has the other benefit of when you start practicing it, you see almost immediate results. You see the mind change very quickly. I don't think it's just me. I think it's everybody. Other people I've talked to that have used this as an everyday practice when envy comes up have found it's almost like shining the light of mindfulness on the envy, and it can't stand it, and it's got to shrink, and in its place, happiness grows. So tomorrow we're going to, I forgot to give you good old Buddhaghosa from the Visuddhimagga that we've been quoting from said there's also benefits from mudita. So here they are. When this meditator develops the mind deliverance of unselfish joy through any of these kinds of absorption, he obtains these 11 advantages. Okay, some of these are very similar to metta, but he sleeps in comfort. He wakes in comfort. He dreams no evil dreams. He is dear to human beings, and he is dear to non-human beings. Deities guard him. This one again, fire and poison and weapons don't affect him. I don't know about that. Nice to think that magic happens. His mind is easily concentrated. The expression of his face is serene. He dies unconfused. He will be born in the Brahma world. So when we are going to do mudita meditation tomorrow, we start with a loved one, a dear person. And, you know, for many, like Dennis, I'm sure it would be his grandson, Koa. It might be a pet. Somebody that you truly, truly want their happiness to grow, that is close to you. It's no effort at all to be saying, I hope your happiness grows and continues to grow. And feeling what that feels like in the heart, with that heartfelt sense. I've got an unusual mudita subject that I use, and it's actually from a video. A group of cows, and mercy for animals saved them from being slaughtered, and they knew it, and they ran for joy. And I see this video each time, it just brings me so much joy. You think animals don't feel? Watch this video. When they realize they're not going to die, they're jumping for joy, running for the first time, feeling grass. And it just opens my heart, and it makes me so happy for them. So that's what I use right now. I might change that, but that's what I'm using now. And then the next person is the benefactor. So we're kind of going in the same order as metta, except we don't start with ourselves. We're going to end with ourselves. And then the neutral person, and then the hostile or difficult person. And then finally, we bring our own self to mind. Appreciating the joy in our lives, seeing it for what it is, not passing it by. You know, one of the exercises, I don't know if anybody's here in my Noble Eightfold Path class, I don't think so. Tell them every day, I want you to put a slip of paper in your gratitude jar, make it different colors, and notice something you're happy and joyful about every day. It's there, but we go by it. We constantly look for what's wrong, what do I have to fix, what do I have to do, when joy is right there. And actually, John Travis, when I had a practice interview with him, he's the one that said that to me. I guess I had just been complaining, you know, and sitting this and whatever. And he said, you are bypassing joy. You're not even looking at it. You wouldn't know if it hit you in the face. That's not what I wanted to hear, but it was true. And ever since then, mudita and looking at joy and recognizing it and what a difference it makes. So I think with that, I will end, and we'll sit for 10 minutes or so.